having had an executive session earlier this morning, so we'll move into our first agenda item, which is approve the minutes of the regular board meeting of October 24th.
I so moved.
A second.
Any comments or questions? We have a motion by Linnea, second by Wendy.
Yes.
Any comments, questions, or corrections? Okay, all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, communications.
I do have one communication to the Board of Education and Administration from Jennifer and Colin Dahl, thanking the board for their condolences as well as the gifts to Wickety and the pilot scholarship program. And she just said, "The success of the pilot program and continued impact of Wickety on the lives of gifted students will provide some measure of meaning to our tragedy. Who knows, a life touched by Olivia's death may be changed or may change the world." So I thought that was really nice. Pass that around for you to take a look at. And that's the official communication I have.
Anybody else with any communications? Okay, moving on to open discussion.
I have something.
Oh.
I've been traveling.
Okay.
So open discussion.
Okay.
First of all, CISA 7 was this past Wednesday. And they brought, the CISA 7 has been re-certified for being a, what would you say, an office for the Student Loan Forgiveness Program for teachers. And those, many of the members there's children have been in that program, and it has almost relieved up to 60% of their debt if they qualify. And mainly the qualifications are on income. So I would certainly recommend any of our teachers carrying debt, that includes those going back for graduate degrees, to contact CISA 7 for that loan forgiveness program. It came via a lot of positive comments. On December 1st, I'll be reading Cole Scholarships for the State at CISA 7, that's Thursday, on December 1st. And I just wanted to make a comment on Veterans Day. That was such, I think if Dr. Methner was spearheading, and Mrs. Van Meer.
Mrs. Wittenborg, there were so
many. Mrs. Wittenborg, I know so many. It was a wonderful program, and this is the venue. I know lots of people, not necessarily when I go to a elementary concert, but they were all just amazed and delighted over everything that had occurred. I guess with that, Mrs. Wittenborg did, and I didn't see all of it, so I apologize if it was there. She did a slide presentation or show on our students who are presently serving. I didn't see, and again, I apologize if I missed it, and that was Pat Flood, just was promoted again to lieutenant colonel, and that occurred maybe 2 weeks ago. So I'm not sure if his photo.
I don't think he was in there. I don't think he was on there, so you might want to.
I'll mention that if they want
to
add. He is presently serving, correct? He and Brian. Brian is a full colonel, and Pat has just been promoted to lieutenant colonel. And that is, those are both sons of Mike and Ann Flood. And Cindy Phillips made the polls, which I thought was wonderful server of the week. And I, oh my gosh, how great. I just thought that was pretty cool. The other two things I wanted to mention was, in January, at the clearing, I'll be participating with Dr. Chernagel from Sturgeon Bay on elected officials. And they have a series. We are on education and elected officials, and there will be town board and presidents that deal with the other county offices and the state office. So that's in January at the clearing, beginning of January. On February 14, Gibraltar has been asked to host Leadership Door County. And so I will be participating, I did last year, on the panel, and Gibraltar will be participating as a spot. Last year, they have about 15 to 20 who sign up for leadership Door County. And last year at Sturgeon Bay, I recognized about 6 were Gibraltar residents, graduates, etc. So that was kind of nice. I don't know who is included this year, but we would participate. So I was excited. I talked with Mrs. Van Meer that, can we do this? And Mark and I, you probably saw our emails back and forth on this. So he is also aware, and Mrs. Van Meer will spearhead or give it to someone on what we may want to highlight or showcase these people as. The discussion is around, in your position, what are the challenges that you face in Door County, et cetera. So these are some of the things that we talk about. Otherwise, it's up for questions, answers from the those who are participating in Leadership Door County. And that is Valentine's Day, February 14th, so we have a little time to plan. The other element is, y'all got your magazine? We have not talked about the National School Board Convention.
Where did that come from?
In our journals we got this week from the American School Board.
Didn't get that yet.
No. Okay. Okay, it'll be coming. And we haven't talked about it, and it's something we've participated in many years, and I always felt it to be really helpful to get out and hear. The speakers are generally excellent, and we hope that we could enter that discussion again as to...
I think it's probably been 3 or 4 years since anybody
right.
went.
Right.
Probably 3.
I think the last one was, yeah, I think we need to throw that out.
We'd always,
Suzanne and Martha went.
You went?
No, Suzanne and Martha.
Okay.
No, I think you and Fred were the last ones to Boston.
We went to Boston. I don't know if Suzanne and Fred went after us.
They didn't.
Okay.
No.
That's when they chose not to. Martha, Suzanne, and Fred. They chose not to.
Because Fred and I were in Boston, and it was excellent. I would highly recommend.
Yeah. That's where you heard Academy that we're using in our school. I know some of in
Khan.
Khan.
Yeah.
I had to think a minute.
Yeah. He was excellent. It was really a good session.
Retrieval is slow.
Recommend that we start that up again.
And I think there are so many good things there. So I would hope. In December, no, December's might be kind of loaded, but at least the beginning of January.
Okay.
Sure. Wherever.
I went with Mrs. Wittenborg and DECA to their Energy Leadership Conference, and the kids were in workshops for like 2 days, and learned a lot and did a great job. Now, considering Gibraltar and how it is, Macy's is doing a Make-A-Wish project, and I think this would be an awesome way to pay it forward and pay it back in honor of our students that we have lost in the past. What they do is they match, Macy's will match every letter that they receive, a letter from Santa, a dollar up to $1 million, and then the school with the most letters, and obviously Gibraltar probably won't win that, but we could donate, and I feel that we would do that in a moving forward way for our students that are dear to our hearts and go on. And then the winning school, the DECA chapter or student council would get a trophy and a gift card to Macy's to be used. I've already got 2 girls that are willing to help with this. I would like it to be K-12. I would like everyone, every child in the school, all you teachers, every single child in the school, including high school, to write a quick little letter to Santa. It has to be done and mailed into Wauwatosa by December 2nd. I realize that doesn't give you enough, a lot of time. I'll come in. I'll help. Call me. Get a hold of me. I would love to do that because the feeling of giving and trying to pay back and move forward, as Bo mentioned so many times. I think it's just amazing. So, what would you?
Do you have informational on this?
Yeah, it's
Could we make a copy? Maybe I could give it to my building principals and have them spearhead.
But would you please include the fact that I would come in and help us?
Sure.
While kids are writing, I don't care whatever I need to do. The time limit is short. It's basically 2 weeks, but. How cool would that be if every student in our school wrote a letter? Okay, what do you want?
I'll pick it up again.
Okay, thank you.
I just wanted to add to what Linnea said about the Veterans Day luncheon and ceremony, that the band and the choir and the first graders were amazing. And just really amazing, really represented our school well. And not only that, the band had to sit on stage
for two hours
behind the veterans, and they did a phenomenal job. That in itself was impressive. So,
and the students in the audience in the balcony were extremely quiet.
And the first graders had to wait in the hallway for like 45 minutes. Or, I don't know. Everybody just really did a great job.
Really special.
Very touching.
Yeah.
Very special day.
I would like to just thank the staff and the administration and the support staff here at Gibraltar. My daughter was recently had a little bit of a health crisis and need some special freedoms to reintroduce to school. And when you can sit across from a doctor and say, these things are not going to be an issue at Gibraltar, and they say, we don't get that kind of cooperation in other schools, it's truly amazing. And I have to say that not just I don't get those kind of considerations because I'm a school board member, I believe it's available to everybody in the community that just asks. So I really appreciate it, and it's worked out very well. So thank you, everybody. Anybody in the audience have anything for open discussion? Ellen?
Hi, yes. First I want to say that I've been going to the parent advisory. We talked about several things, but one of the things that I feel strongly, and after talking to many parents, is about the very short amount of time that the kids have to go from classroom to classroom. This is something we can revisit and put on the minutes again. I just don't think 3 minutes is enough, and I think causes stress, but also physically, these kids don't have time to get rid of their backpacks. They're hauling them around. I'm talking about high schoolers especially.
Thank you for bringing that up, Helen. I completely...
You know, if we can revisit this, I don't know, maybe there was a really good reason it had to be that way, but it would be really great. And I haven't talked to a parent that doesn't feel in one way or another that that's okay. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Jamie McCarthy, and on behalf of Dr. Mettner, he wanted me to introduce the parent advisory group tonight. This is my husband, Mike, and we've been here just over a year. We have two daughters, Molly in seventh and Megan in sixth. And like Helen was saying, we are part of this group that is formed, and we're totally excited. It's going to be fantastic. So we probably, and we were supposed to be on a field trip tonight. There's just a few. Helen and Jody is here, and it looks like that's it with the group. Is anyone else in that parent advisory group? So, and just to hit on this, we may be coming back. I hope that we will be coming back to these meetings. But just three topics that we are going to be talking about that Helen talked a little bit about. Well, one of them is technology. And we're going to focus on the use of technology. The second one will be student health as it relates to stress, eating, etc., and to her point. And the third one will be the school website improvement. So we'll bring you our ideas and all that.
I have to comment on the school website piece already. I don't know. One of your first meetings, you came up with an idea of having the scroll for what's happening right now, what's happening today.
Right.
And they got it right on the site. It looks great. I love it. So thank you for your input. That's wonderful. Thank you for being here, too.
I have something. I know you've kind of talked a little bit about the Veterans Day, but I'm going to take a little bit of a different spin
For the last few weeks, the elementary has had the Veterans Day Assembly on its daily announcements. It was in Principal Annan's newsletter to the staff. And we've been asked to make placemats, provide entertainment, and give up our playground so veterans can park closer to the auditorium. I was surprised Wednesday to find out that the elementary students were not invited to the Veterans Day Assembly. I do not know how the rest of the elementary teachers feel about this issue, but I, for one, find it very disappointing. Students need to know about our history, and by not including them in this teachable moment, they will not understand how close to home that history truly is. Students might find out that the old man that lives down the road is actually a veteran that served in World War II. When I was a senior in high school, my dad and brother, who were in the National Guard, were called up to serve in Iraq in the Gulf War. I know how important recognizing our veterans is, and the joy that it brings to them realizing that people still care. Veterans are passing away at an alarming rate, and as we host the Veterans Day Assembly every 4 years, it is sad to think that our kindergartners will not be invited to an assembly until they are in seventh grade, and that's in 8 years. How many veterans will be left? I take the seventh and eighth graders to Washington, D.C., and we visit multiple memorials. At those memorials, we see many veterans. Students need to know these people. One of my most memorable moments on these trips occurred in 2014. While at the Iwo Jima Memorial, ready to leave on our two tour buses, four busloads of veterans arrived. A few students asked if they could get off the bus and shake hands and say thank you to these veterans. More students followed, until both of our buses unloaded and formed a line to shake every veteran's hand. It was cold and snowing, and I was warm inside with tears in my eyes. I was a proud teacher witnessing that teachable moment come to life. I was proud to be an American to see these students recognizing the old men and women that helped shape our country. Later, one of the honored flight organizers thanked me for having such patriotic students and that I should be very proud of them, and I was. I spoke with some students who were disappointed that they were not allowed to go and watch their grandpa at the assembly, and still others were looking forward to it, to see the veterans. I remember in years past, the entire student body, K-12, here at Gibraltar, was in the high school gym and witnessed the assembly. I know that nothing can be changed for this year, but I'm hoping that something can be done for the next Veterans Day Assembly in 4 years when Gibraltar hosts again. When I inquired about not being able to attend, I was told that the program was for older students and the community. My question is why? Change the program to include everyone. I understand it might be a long time to sit for younger kids, but a 30-minute program would be great for everyone, young and old. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Mike. Yeah.
I'm sorry I came in late. Do I address the long-term care issues now or later?
You can. It's on the agenda. It's the next item, so you're welcome to talk when it's on the agenda.
Brilliant. Okay. Right. I wasn't sure right. Whether I'm able to when it's on the agenda. Got it. Thanks.
Okay. Edit for open discussion, then we'll move on to the presentation on long-term care insurance and benefits.
And I wanted to introduce to everyone, we have Mandy from M3. M3 is an insurance partnership that we have. Gibraltar is a member of the Door Kewanee Insurance Cooperative. So we work with all other schools in Door County and Kewanee area to negotiate or bargain our insurance coverage, which has saved the district thousands of dollars. And Mandy's here representing our partnership in this long-term care issue. And then we have Ross from WEA, who is here to provide a little more information on long-term care and the buyout options that are available for board's consideration. Before you begin, I do have to tell the board, we had hoped that we would be able to vote on this tonight, but after seeking advice from our school attorney, we know now that we need to have all members of our board here to vote because we have to have a quorum, and we have three members on the board who are not able to participate in the discussions or the voting because they are impacted by the benefit, which means we have to have at least 4 board members to vote. So we're going to have to wait on that, and you can talk about that in your next agenda item, what you want to do with that. But for now, we'll just start with the presentation and
sure.
and then open it up for any questions that the board or audience might have.
Sure.
Or discussion items.
Great.
Thank you.
All right. So earlier this year, the WEA Trust announced that they are offering all school districts that still carry the group long-term care insurance a one-time opportunity to terminate that group policy and offer the individuals that are enrolled an opportunity to get a benefit. It's called the non-forfeiture benefit without paying any more premium out of their pocket. This opportunity expires December 31st, 2016, and WEA has been very clear that this is a true one-time opportunity. So we are presenting to the board and the rest of the school district with the choices that have been given to the district on what they have the option to do. So really, it comes down to 2 options. They can keep the policy in force and continue to take on any premium increases that happen, or they could terminate the group policy and offer the individuals that are enrolled, both employees and retirees, the opportunity to take termination options. And there are 3 termination options. There's the non-forfeiture benefit. In a nutshell, that benefit will pay be a lump sum for anyone that has had 120 paid premium months into the long-term care policy. Based on their tenure and the amount of time they've paid into the policy, that benefit will be a different amount. They don't pay any more premium for that benefit. The next option is an accelerated paid-up benefit. The benefit is going to continue to grow with time, just like the current one does, has inflation protection. But anyone that has 120 premium paid months in is also eligible for this. It is a large premium to pay for it, and you pay it up front in a lump sum amount, and then you have the policy until you don't need it. And the third option is a conversion option. This option is for anyone that has been enrolled for 4 months, so it will cover a lot of the population. The conversion policy is for individuals that will take the group plan and convert it into an individual policy and will continue to pay the premiums to WEA directly, but there's no guarantee on what those premiums will look like in the future. It's been shown that they will grow, not in a linear curve, but more exponential. They will get much more expensive as you get older. So those are the 3 termination options if the district does decide to terminate their policy with the trust. If they choose not to terminate the policy with the trust in 2016, in the future, the 2 options that will remain are the accelerated paid-up option, which is to pay a really large premium and continue a benefit with the trust, or the conversion option. So if they don't terminate 2016, they lose that non-forfeiture benefit that would give people a large lump sum benefit without paying any more premium. So that is what we are sharing with the board. And I will have Ross talk about some more of the more granular details of the 3 options and address any questions you may have.
Thank you. Good evening. As Mandy said, I am Ross Hampton. I work at the WEA Trust in Madison. I spend my days in our ancillary services area helping folks with life insurance, group long-term care, group vision questions. We did a presentation earlier today for staff. It was about an hour and a half, so I figured we'd go about 3 hours tonight. I'm kidding. To be honest, the document you have in front of us, we include in the packets of information should the employer decide to terminate. So each individual that's covered under the plan will get this in their packet. When I answer the phone each day, if I'm talking to a member that's got questions, this is my go-to. This is one of the things that I ask them to pull out, and we go through it. I'm not a financial planner, so I can't offer financial planning advice. But typically, by the time I get through about the 4th or 5th row on the first page, folks know which direction they'd like to go. So I kind of want to recap what brings us here and then talk about each of the options in a little more detail. And then, of course, answer any questions that you may have. So we started the long-term care plan over 25 years ago. And at our peak of enrollments for in the group long-term care plan, we had over 100 school districts. As we talk about the plan today, there are less than five. What we heard in most of the terminations of coverage have happened in the last 5 years, and our executives were approached by a couple of school districts last year saying that they would need to terminate the plan. They could no longer afford it with their budget. They had one simple question, and that was, is there anything we could do to provide a benefit? There was something other than the accelerated paid-up, what Mandy referred to previously as that large lump sum payment, or the conversion plan. Both these districts had run 20 years in the plan, and were looking for something that they could pass along when they terminate, so it didn't feel like such a loss. So the executives came back to the trust and charged my area and actually every employee at the trust with ideas, and we came up with a lot, everything from retiree-only coverage to reduced benefit programs, buy-ins, and so on. From there, we took those ideas and we sat in front of our actuarial area to make sure that they were financially sound and secure, not just something we could do today, but we could do in 20, 40, 60 years as people have these plans would expect to have their needs met. With that being completed, one option stood out. Actually, only one option was left, and that's the modified non-forfeiture benefit that we'll go into detail in a little bit. From there, we took that option to the Commissioner of Insurance, reviewed it with them so that they understood what was happening in the marketplace and got their blessing as well. So with that, I'd like to refer to the chart. The column on the left is a broad category-based. The next column is the non-forfeiture benefit. This is option number one that we commonly refer to. The next column over is the accelerated paid-up option. This is the lump sum amount, option number two. And the third option, the conversion plan, is all the way to the far right. What you'll see by the first row on who is eligible, a covered employee and a covered spouse, both with 120 or more months, are eligible for the non-forfeiture plan. If the employee or retiree has more than 120 months, they're eligible for the accelerated paid-up plan. And anybody with more than 3 months of coverage is eligible for the conversion plan. One of the large pros or cons with these options is always based on cost, which is the next row. The modified non-forfeiture option is free. The accelerated paid-up option is a lump sum payment, and it's going to range, depending on age and amount of time, between $20,000 and $80,000. Folks that have been in the plan longer will be closer to the $20,000 end. The folks that have just barely hit that 10-year, that 120-month mark, will be closer to the $80,000 mark. The conversion plan, I typically don't recommend it for folks. The state of Wisconsin requires that our group long-term care plan have a safety net for folks, and that's called a group conversion plan. While it's a plan that the individual pays for, him or herself, the law requires it to mimic the plan they were under. So you can't customize it, you can't change the elimination period or the benefit period or any of those factors that could provide some cost relief. The rates are based on an individual's age. Over the last 10 years, those have gone up about 15%. And on the very back page, you'll see that a 65-year-old currently costs just over $270 a month. So if you've got two 65-year-olds, a husband and wife, you're going to pay two times $270 per month. So very expensive. Again, those plans tend to increase about 15% a year, so it can quickly become unaffordable. What I told folks that were in attendance earlier is if the district determines to terminate the plan, once we mail out the packets, if anyone selects conversion, they're actually going to get a call from me. because I want to put pencil to paper with them to make sure that they see in the long term what it's going to cost over time. Because for much like the district, for individuals, if they don't elect the non-forfeiture option, it won't be available again in the future. Qualified partnership status, this has to do with the Medicaid program. Medicaid is primarily responsible for paying nursing home expenses for most folks. And it's a 50-50 split right now between the federal government and the state. Years ago, the federal government decided with the looming baby boomers that they could not afford to carry that burden for long, so they tried to create an incentive for folks to buy long-term care insurance. And their incentive is called the partnership plan. There are certain qualifications that a state must go through and an insurance company must go through to be considered qualified. With the WA Trust Plan, the non-forfeiture benefit, that option number one, is not considered a qualified plan, but options two, the accelerated paid-up, and option three, the conversion plan, would be. Right now, in order to qualify for Medicaid, a husband and wife can have no more than one house, one car, and $2,000 in assets. And at that point, Medicaid can come in and assist with the payment for nursing home or home health care services. With the partnership qualified plan, the government says that for every dollar paid by a qualified plan for your benefit, you get to keep another dollar in assets. So if we, for example, say that your long-term care paid out $300,000 for your services and was a qualified plan, my example goes from one house, one car, $2,000 to one house, one car, $300. $2,000. So it provides folks with a possibility to protect assets, protecting the spouse from impoverishment as well, being able to leave or gift things to children, grandchildren, church, community, those kind of end wishes that we all have. Again, the first option, the free option, does not qualify for that partnership. The second option, a large lump sum payment, does. And the conversion plan does. One of the other key factors in deciding which plan works best for folks is the inflation protection benefit. On the first option, the modified non-forfeiture option, the number calculated is the number calculated. It never will increase. It can only decrease with claims. Under the second and third options, where right now the lifetime maximum is just over $500,000, those benefits increase by 5% every September 1st. Even with an individual being on claim, the unused portion is increased by 5%. The benefit limits is probably the last row that I'll talk about, and then open it up to any questions you might have. In order to calculate the modified non-forfeiture benefit, we look at the individual's current status, so how long they've been in the plan, how many months of premium they've had, and we compare that to what it would take to naturally acquire a paid-up plan. The policy says that you can naturally acquire a paid-up plan by having 30 years of premium, 360 months of premium, and being age 65 or older. So we look at where you are today compared to that end goal, and that provides us a ratio. We then take that ratio and multiply it by the benefit maximums in the plan currently, and that gives us the number that is a modified non-forfeiture maximum benefit amount, daily benefit amount, and respite benefit amount. The center column, the accelerated paid up, and the last column, the conversion plan, those numbers are going to be the same. This document was from early in the year, so it does not show the increases that happened September 1st. But the $483,000 on September 1 went to $507,000, just under $508,000. The daily maximum of $323 increased to $339, and the respite increased to $168. So it shows the inflation increases. So individuals can really look at their own needs, meet with their financial planners, their family, their loved ones to figure out which option best suits their needs, whether it be the free option, the lump sum payment option, or the conversion option. I hope that answers your question. hope that was helpful, and I'm more than happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Piatt and Mrs. Malfi, you will be the only two that are allowed to really participate in the discussion at this point. So any questions that you might have or any initial thoughts, discussion you wanted to have, and then obviously we would bring it back to the next board meeting for more discussion.
I don't think I have any questions.
What were the questions asked in some of the questions asked her in the earlier meeting, I guess, by
sure.
some of our employees?
One of the questions was, does this mean the WA Trust is going out of business for long-term care, getting out of the long-term care business? Absolutely not. It wouldn't be right for us to make this kind of offer in getting out of the business. The liabilities that we have, we fully expect to meet over time. So we're not getting out of long-term care. I think there was a lot of clarification on that first benefit being a free benefit. The second benefit being a large lump sum pay in quite the range, 20 to 80,000. Folks wanted to kind of better understand where they might fall in that continuum.
I would say a couple of different individuals asked the question just to confirm that if the district doesn't make a decision in 2016, that first non-forfeiture option will not be available in the future, and that is correct. So the other two options on that chart in front of you would still be available, but that first one is not.
When you look at your financial tables, I would assume that what you're looking at is that the cost of long-term care is far outstripping what you can realistically raise in premiums. So this is a way to cap some of that?
Well, I think that's a piece of it. Additionally, given what budgets have been, the long-term care losses post-Act 10 have been tremendous. Where before, in certain scenarios, salary was given up, that no longer exists. So natural attrition has occurred, and we've lost a lot of plans.
Did I hear correct that there's five districts that you have now?
Yes. Yep. Five remain. We wish everybody could have it, but we know what budgets are. I'm glad the board sought out these kind of options with us. I'm glad they decided on the modified non-forfeiture. I think financially and long-term, it was the only one that stood all the measures. But I'm more proud of them that they didn't just relate to the two employers that asked, but to everyone.
Thank you.
Open it up to anybody in the audience?
Yeah, anybody in the audience have questions?
Or comments?
I would imagine most of you were here for the earlier session. Ann?
I'm Ann Kuiper. Somebody doesn't know me. I was at the presentation this afternoon. Thank you very much. And thank you for the board to bring this to the attention. I completely support the idea of the first plan, and I just made the 10-year mark. So I think it's a really good idea. People have, the board probably knows that the GEA negotiated this as a benefit and took less pay to get this benefit years ago. And so I think it's a fair way for people to then be able to maximize that benefit. Thank you to the WEA to have that option. One thing that was brought up at the meeting earlier was that the school systems that a couple of years ago opted out, they lost everything. And most of the employees here don't have $20,000 to $80,000 to dump into something, you know. And then the other option is, as you said, you would call us because it's not a very feasible financially. So they talked about how it would double and double and double and double, and the premium would just get too high. So I really do support, and I'm speaking for Jan Dixon too, who told me he wasn't going to stay around. So, and the other thing that I did bring up at the meeting too is the board currently pays, I think, $141 towards this benefit for current employees. And one thing that's been discussed among staff members is we would like to see that, you know, go for another benefit of some kind into, you know, reducing the health care deductibles or a 403B or some, you know, and there's half of our employees or more than half are under the 10-year mark. And so, you know, that's going to be discussed later if you decide to go, you know, to stop the long-term care, but also kind of looking at, okay, what can we do with that extra funds that you would normally give to the premium of the long-term care? With the younger employees in mind, and the older employees too, but, you know, maybe a little bump on the lower side. But those are just things that staff is talking about, like, you know, what would happen to that $141 that we currently have in the benefit? Where would that go? The vast majority of the senior staff really support the idea of the buyout, of the optional. Because, it's going to give me something. And I've only been here 10 years, and I can't imagine people who've been here 20 or 30 years. Well, we've been under the plan for 21 years. But they do take a cut in pay to be part of that benefit. So, then again, thank you for letting us have a voice, because a lot of people don't get that. So, thanks.
Thanks, Amy.
Thank you, Amy.
Thank you, Amy. And I know we'll be bringing this back based on your next discussion item. But just a couple things for you to hear and ponder. We had 55 people come to the meeting, and I gave them each a slip of paper that just said, would you support the Board of Education moving forward with a buyout option? And just so you know, 48 said yes, and 7 said no. I also want you to realize, and we can bring back that survey from last year that we did with all of our employees. As you know, to be fair, there was a 50-50 split on feelings about this. And we know that because you have over half of your employees who will benefit from a one-time. You have half of your employees who will not benefit from that. So that's a discussion item that you need to be talking about too. And I know when the board has talked about this previously, we talked possibly about thinking about other things that we can do for those who don't qualify for the benefit or beyond. So I just think there's a lot of things that need to be discussed. And our timeline, is my understanding, is we have to have the letter of intent out by December 1st. So even if, I know that we won't have the full board until November 28th. So even if we have that discussion on November 28th, and make a decision at that time, then we can send out the letter of intent the next day and we'll still be fine.
Yes.
And it will still give our employees, as you heard, they're all going to get individual packets with their individual information that they have to fill out. So it'll still give them plenty of time because they have to be in.
They'll get 60 days after the termination date, which is actually March 1st of 2017, to have their elections to us if you decide to terminate the plan.
Thank you.
So,
I just want to say that this is a really short, it's like a week and a half away that we need to send this letter of intent in. And I hope that the board isn't going to say something like, well, you know, we only have a week and a half. Let's just continue with long-term care for another year for our employees, and we'll see what happens then. The question that I asked to be clarified at the meeting, if the school board decides to stay with the long-term care, in a year or 2 years, if you decide we no longer can afford to pay it, that option one is no longer available. You can take option two, but you have to come up with the $20,000 to $80,000. If you can't come up with the $20,000 to $80,000, you have nothing. You're back down to zero. Mm-hmm. So I think that is real. I mean, I know you're going to talk about option number three. It sounds like, but
that's been a discussion for a while.
I want to be fair to the board because I want to make it real clear that the board has spent a lot of time.
This is not something we've just been talking about at this meeting or previous.
I understand that, but when I heard December 1st, like, oh my gosh, okay. But yeah, but that's, I think that
we've been working our way towards this.
I know you guys talked about it back in April or whatever.
It's been a long, I couldn't tell you when we started.
When I asked that question at tonight's meeting, though, that really clarified it for me to understand that it's a really a big decision right now.
It is. Thank you. Rick?
What was that equation you gave us? You gave an equation about something or another?
So we talked about a couple different calculations earlier. The first was how we calculate the modified non-forfeiture, the first option, how we come up with those numbers. And so we look at where you are today in age and number of months of coverage and compare that to what the policy says you get for a paid-up plan, and that's 360 months and at least age 65. So we use that ratio, multiplying it by the current benefit values to come up with your benefit value under the non-forfeiture. We also talked about how we calculate the accelerated paid-up. That is based on your age, the premium, the current premium level, so the 141.71, and how long you've been in the plan. And we use that to calculate the lump sum payment, that $20,000 to $80,000.
And how do you figure months?
Months are paid premium months, and so the policy says that if your coverage is effective between the 1st and the 15th, premium is due that month. It says that if your coverage is effective the 16th through the end of the month, we don't charge premium. So for folks that would start August 28th, their first month of coverage counted would be September.
What about 9-month employees? Are their premiums still paid through the summer?
Yes. Yes, I believe the district pays those all 12
months.
Those
are all premium months?
Yes.
Okay, I've heard different numbers as to how long Gibraltar has been in the plan. You just said 25 years.
I apologize. I meant to say, and I hope I said, that we started the plan about 25 years ago. Gibraltar's been in the plan just under 21 and a half.
Can you verify more on the age 65 on the non-forfeiture plan, benefit plan? You know, how does that work in with I've been in the plan 21 and a half years.
Okay.
So I've got 6.5 years remaining for the paid up full plan. And I've got 9 years until I'm 65.
Okay.
How would that all... I don't expect hard numbers.
So the policy says you've got to pay until the conditions are met, at least 360 months and age 65 or older. So for you, you're going to have to pay 9 years, not the 8.5, because that'll get you to age 65 and 360 or more months. For me, I started in the long-term care plan when I was 30, so I'm in this scenario, I'm going to have to pay till I'm 65, because that's 35 years, not just the 30, because I have to meet all the conditions. So depending on where you are, that ratio applies. The simplest way that I can get you a ballpark calculation is 360 months, half of that is 180. And so if you had 180 months, you would have roughly half the benefit. Where today it's $500,000, you'd have roughly $250,000.
Okay.
That's broad ballpark.
Yes.
Because the 5 years extra that you need to get to 65 factor in there. But I think the averages we talked about in the first meeting, where most folks are going to have around the $300,000 mark, I really believe is true given how long this district has been here. I know half are higher and half are lower, so you're going to see some folks with 360,000 because they've been here 21 and a half and they hit the 360 months after age 65 so that they don't have extra to pay. But that's about as close as I can get without actually having a directive to quote the information. Yep. And we don't like doing it because the insurance commissioner tends to think that we're making an offer and people will see that free benefit and they think they have it. And so we've taken the position that we just won't show the numbers unless we have a directive.
Now, I've been around the block a few times, so my memory gets jostled.
Sure.
From what I remember, when we first started talking about this last spring, at some point, the presentation we were originally given is that WEA was stopping the group long-term care program.
And I apologize because I didn't give that presentation, so I don't know who did. My guess is that you're thinking about the long-term disability program. We did stop that this year.
Okay, but that was going.
Yep, but not long-term care.
But not long-term care, okay.
Yep.
Maybe I got the two mixed up.
It's easy, especially when you go by the acronyms LTD and LTC, but I don't know who did the presentation to verify with you, but we are.
But I know the concern was, after we've paid in all these years, all of a sudden, if WEA could cancel long-term disability like that, you know.
Sure.
And so that, after all these years of paying in long-term care, if they can cancel that like that also,
sure,
and that was a negotiated benefit, you know, where out the money, the schools out
sure.
The money, everybody loses on our end, but WEA comes out smelling like a rose,
sure,
because they're out the liability.
Sure. Let me give you something that, a little bit more information that hopefully will provide you a little bit of comfort. So the WEA Trust is a not-for-profit. We don't have shareholders to report to or Wall Street to answer to. However, we do have the Wisconsin Commissioner of Insurance. The Commissioner of Insurance in Wisconsin is like most commissioners of insurance. One of their most heavily watched programs are what they call elder care programs. So they keep a close eye on nursing home plans, long-term care plans, and Medicare, Medicare supplement plans. And so having said that, I can also tell you that on a regular basis, we have to report our assets and liability numbers to the Commissioner of Insurance. Here's where I hope you have some comfort. The Commissioner of Insurance has wide powers, very, very broad. Everything from if they don't like the numbers we submit, they can pick up the phone and call the CEO and CFO and say, get it right, get it straightened out, to ultimately seizing all of the assets and all of the liabilities and turning it over to another company. So the Commissioner of Insurance has that great of power that if for some reason they thought we were doing something inappropriate or couldn't live up to our promises, that they could basically seize the assets and liabilities.
And that's supposed to give us comfort?
Unfortunately, you know, whether you think back to Enron or others where that oversight wasn't there,
right.
At least in Wisconsin, we do have that oversight.
Anybody else?
Okay. I just want to thank Ross and Mandy for being here. It's been a very long day. They've done three presentations now, so thank you very much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thanks.
It's a safe trip back.
Thank you.
Can I ask a question? You said that you dropped the long-term disability insurance. When was that dropped?
In late 2015, we sent a communication to our broker partners in school district saying that we were focusing on health care, which includes long-term care, and so we were no longer offering the long-term disability plan, and so that would have happened upon renewal. I don't know when Gibraltar renewed or had renewed the long-term disability plan, but I should probably point out that it's good to know that individuals that were on claim, receiving claim from us, are still on claim and still receiving claim from us. They didn't get just thrown to the wolves. We didn't want to gain new business and focus energies on long-term disability. We really think healthcare, long-term care, those are our primary strengths.
Okay.
So.
And it was moved to another insurance company, so it didn't get terminated as a benefit. It just was transitioned to another
insurance
company.
That's what I need to know. Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you.
All right,
thank you.
I'd entertain a motion to table item 8, which is discuss and take possible action since we lack a quorum. Rick, would you like to make a motion on that?
I will make a motion.
I'll second that. All in favor? Thank you. And we'll pick that up probably at our 28th or thereabouts meeting. Okay, your first reading of proposed amendments to policy 5421.04, elementary student grades.
In your packet, you have the current policy that we just approved not too long ago on elementary school or elementary grading. Due to the fact that I don't have the electronic versions from NAOL at this point where I can just pull them up and edit them for you, I just had to work another page that looks pretty similar, but all I did was add the proposed language. So if you look at the current policy, you've got an A, you've got a B. So I'm proposing to add C. My reason for doing this is because we do have a pilot program. Our multi-age program takes a different look, and pilots are research-based. They're alternative ways of looking at how to do things. And because of that, I wanted to make it very clear in board policy that the way that we're grading these students or assessing and monitoring them will look different than what's happening throughout the rest of the district. This language it's general, but yet it's specific enough to show you what we're looking at. And I've asked members of our multi-age team to talk with you just a little bit about what that looks like, what they've been doing currently. And I know we just had parent-teacher conferences, and I've asked them to share some of the feedback that they've been receiving from the parents on that. We, as you know, our board policy requires more than one reading, so it will be brought back at the next board meeting for final consideration. So I'm going to read you the language really quick, and then I'm going to ask you guys to talk about how you're using this. And I'll direct your attention to a few key words in this comment. So student learning and growth in the multi-age pilot program will be assessed using an alternate method that takes into consideration each student's progression through a continuum of educational standards approved by the Board of Education. What's important about this language is that it's not so specific that it limits the pilot, because we know as we're working through things, some things are going to work really well and some things need to be tweaked and changed. And we don't want to tie the hands of our teachers who are in the business of giving us the very best method that they can come up with for assessing students. Very important word, pilot, because we know what a pilot is all about. And that's why I put it in there to remind us that this is a pilot program. Alternate method, which means it's going to look different. Student progression. It's all about how our students are moving through a continuum of educational standards. That is key to this pilot. That's the whole vision of why we're doing what we're doing. We have students who could be in a first grade traditional by age, this is where they're at, who are working very naturally at a third or fourth grade level on some standards. On other standards, they may be working at a first grade level. On other standards, they still may be at a kindergarten level, and it happens naturally. So we have to be careful about being so specific that we're limiting what we can do with these kids. I've also asked our multi-age teachers to talk to you about how do we report this with the state, because the state isn't caught up with what we're doing, so of course they're going to give us some regulations, and I'm feeling very confident after talking to this team and looking at the work that they're doing that what they are doing is very easy to transfer to our state reporting system. And I hope that they'll be able to explain that a little bit to you, too, just so you understand that we'll be able to meet that requirement. So if you guys don't mind, yes. We want to introduce yourselves just in case.
Could I turn the projector on? Okay.
Absolutely.
And then I think we have copies for people that have the backs, too.
Great. Well, I'm Emily Spohn. I'm one of the multi-age teachers.
I'm Laura Lesby, also part of the multi-age team.
And I'm Shane Harvey.
Anyone else want a sample? Science, social studies,
reading, fiction, nonfiction, literature, speaking, and writing. So each student has this, all of this in their student drive. So this is an example of one. So if we just click on math. This is what we've spent our summer creating together. These are other progressions that Ms. Bambira has been talking about. And what we did is we took the state standards. So this isn't what we made up or anything. This is what the state tells us that we need to teach. And we took it and we went through each grade and we matched up which standards met each, went together. So in this instance, in this math, this is all about operations and algebraic thinking. So all of these grow off of each other. So understanding, putting together, and taking away. Doing addition, subtraction, multiplication, division, word problems. And underneath it are all the I can statements. These are what the students need to know how to do in order to go on to the next level. As you're looking at it, level one in our, we call them by levels. We have level one, two, three, four, and five. You can think of it as level one as the kindergarten standards, level two as first grade standards, three, second grade standards, four, third grade standards, and then our level five is fourth grade standards, so we can go above the third grade if necessary. How we do this is we create pre-test and post-test for anything.
Yes, so for instance in math, for every unit that we study, the first one was geometry. We had a pre-test and those tests were given at certain levels. There was a K-1 test, a 1-2, and a 2-3. So the children were tested and then placed into groups based off what they were where they were performing. After the unit has been taught, then we do a post-test of the same, it looks, this test look exactly the same, they're just different numbers, different orders, things like that. And then we go through, once we have the results of that test, to determine if they have met their standard or if they're still working. So when it comes to grading the progressions, we go through each individual student with the, with their post-test, and we say, okay, can this student do each of these skills? And if they can, then that box is checked. Since this is a Google document, it's a working document, we can change this at any time. When we go back later and hit on the standard again, we'll be able to see if they have still maintained that.
I think it's really important if you could just expand a little bit on the Google document and why that is so important, because every student, you can access every single student's file through Google. And you want to explain why that is so significant as a team of teachers with those kids?
Yep. So Google allows us to share all of the students' information at once. I can access the same form that Emily can access, that Michelle can access, that Katie can access, and we can be editing at the same time. And so it's really cool for us to be able to be on the same kids' standards, checking it or going through different folders and not having to pass that flash drive around or not having to pass that folder around. But going forward, we can also share this folder with parents, possibly, if that's something that we want to do. And so they can see an updated progression of what their student is doing at a certain time.
And going off of that, because the kids are grouped in so many different ways, I can have, 13 students that I'm putting these progressions in, but our home basis, Shane or Laura could have another 13 group. So it's not, I'm not focusing on my just kindergarten kids. It's anyone and everyone in that particular group that we're teaching, that we know off of.
Just to go back about the check and the circle and the square, the check is they've shown us that they can do the standard. They've shown us that they can represent addition with objects, fingers, drawings, etc. The circle means we've taught it, and in the post-test, they really didn't show us that they understood. And the square means that we haven't gotten it. Now that's just an example of the icons that we're using.
So this is what our parents will be receiving at trimester. Is this type of document printed out of all of the certain standards that we are hitting. And they will be able to go through and see exactly what we have taught, exactly what their student knows, and exactly what they can do to progress. And it doesn't mean that they're stuck in this level one. We have students that are going up, back, and forward, you know, getting some of the level four, but not the level three, and the parents know exactly what their student or their child knows. And that's how we're doing our grading.
Okay, so on one side we have the parents, and on the other side we have our parents, the state.
Is there something you want to...
Just if you want to expand a little bit on how your parent-teacher conferences went using that document?
Yep. So we showed each of our parents an example of their geometry and their
numbers
and base tens. And when we went through it in the K-1 home base, we had all positive feedback. They were really excited to see exactly what their child knew. And it was nice to see for some of those parents that were worried that their students were bored or weren't getting, you know, being pushed to seeing, oh, wow, my child has been pushed and can know these things. And I can see what exactly those teachers are doing for that child. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Same response from the 2-3. I stepped in on both sides of the conference. And there was very much positive feedback. And I think that most of the parents felt that, wow, they actually knew what was being taught to them. And they knew if they wanted to, they could help them with skills they might not have. I know a lot of parents want to know, well, what can I do to help them? So this allows them that opportunity to see those things that maybe they need some more practice on, things like that. So it was a positive feedback all around.
Was there any concern on the parents' part? Because you hear this a lot, you know, if I don't have a specific grade to look at, I don't know for sure where my student is, or are they doing okay, or how do I know they're going to be ready when they leave this program? Any concerns there or conversations about that?
We didn't have any conversations about that. It was in our one that we talked about. It was by the end of the time with their program with us in those 4 years, we will help them get through this. And with that statement, parents in the question.
Once we explain the symbols and how this was a 4-year document, and that we wanted the kids to have all of these skills by the end of the time they leave the middle age in its current state, they were pretty understanding. So.
I don't want to. Go ahead. I'm a parent of a kindergartner, and I also have a fifth grader and an eighth grader. So I've been through I don't know how many grading systems we've been through in my kids' time here. What I would say is I loved this, and I don't have any concerns. I love the detailing of it. I think that the one thing that for our teachers in the traditional path, that I don't necessarily think that, like, you guys have reinvented and come up with this major thing. I think you guys are still, you're doing this. It's just not laid out as much for the parents. So I think it's good in that it does this. And I know that in the past, not with my eighth grader, but with the fifth grader, so probably third or fourth grade, maybe even in second and first, I don't know. I don't remember. It kind of runs together. But there were things similar to this. However, they would stop with the grade level as to what the standards were, which is super helpful. And I love the expansion of this and to give those teachers the option, because I'm sure they're doing this on many levels as well within their classroom, to delineate it as well would be something that I would love to see if they would be interested in that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, I love it. So, thanks.
Mm-hmm. And then for when we need to give a number for the state, it is very easy for us to look at this and determine whether they get a 1, a 2, a 3, or a 4. Because we broke it into the different levels, as level 1 being kindergarten, if we are grading a kindergarten designated by the state, we can look through each of the checkmarks of what we have taught and say, do they have this checked off? Are there any open circles that they don't have yet? And then determine, oh, they have them all checked off, they're a 3. If they have anything above into level 2, level 3, and level 4, and we feel that they are showing above, then that is a level 4. If there is many open circles and things like that, that will determine us it's a level 2 or a level 1. And the same goes for if we're looking at a second grade for the state. If they have things that are all checked off from level 2 and level 1, that lets us know that they're a solid 3. If they're above that, that gives us a 4. If there are lots of gaps, we can designate that as a 2. And that's how we're going to be able to present to the state.
Does the board have any questions or comments or concerns?
This is all math-based. Do you
yes.
have the same for reading and writing?
Yep, it's all right here.
So I'll just open up a reading.
This was just a sample for you to see.
Okay.
We have done it for every Wisconsin state standard that they have given us. We have also done it for science and for social studies.
Including ESL and
yep.
Did you have a break at all during the summer? Did you have a break at all during the summer? It's a lot of work. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
But this really helps us teach
no doubt.
To the standards and know exactly where our students are falling.
Mm-hmm.
So when they are lacking in something, we can pinpoint it exactly for us.
Good job.
Thank you very much
yep.
for coming tonight, guys.
How does this program work for students moving in and out of it? Or is this pretty much once they're in, they're in and no one else is allowed in? Or because how do you pick up from someone that came from a traditional classroom without testing them extensively to find out if they're a level 3 or level 2 or...
We encourage that because it was a parent choice to come in, that we encourage the parents to keep them in the whole 4 years.
But what if other parents would like their kids to come in?
It depends on numbers, openings,
but I think what you're asking is how you determine if they have check marks or circles or squares.
No, what about parents would like to have their kids in that program?
Right. Okay, so a new child enters the program, how do they determine where they are? Is that what you were asking?
Yes.
So you would...
Based on our pretests. If a lot of this is building upon each other, so if they can do... It, once we pretest, we can see exactly where they are. And once they do...
Or would they have to go back to level 1-1
yeah.
and test through it?
No. If we can see that they are able to use strategies to solve addition word problems with 100,
if they can do that... It's also a limited number of students that were allowed in.
If I can help with that question,
yes.
This is a pilot, Rick, which means you're right. A pilot needs to be research-based. You want to have, part of this is to see if we use a different type or approach to student learning, will there be significant growth among these students? So you're using certain students in that program. In kindergarten, when we first started this, parents, Mr. Andy, maybe you want to jump in on this. There was opportunity for parents to sign up for the program. Okay. As we expanded last year, there was opportunities for parents to be involved in the program. Am I correct, Mr. Annan?
You are correct.
Okay. So now we have a group of parents and students who are involved in the program, and we are encouraging them to stay in the program so that we can make sure that the research we're doing is validated. If you have people moving in constantly in and out of a pilot, it's really difficult to see that what you're doing is working. Could this be expanded sometime in the future when it's no longer a pilot? Very possible. But we need to see what the research shows us and what's happening in there with students and their growth before we would go to a level of expanding it and opening it up to even more students. Does that help a little bit?
My feeling as a parent, because yes, I work for the school, but I'm not into this stuff.
It's okay.
You know what I mean?
Yes, I do.
Is that it becomes an exclusive group. You know, and how many years has Gibraltar worked on not taking kids? Not putting labels on them.
Well, I'm going to have to stop you right there just because this very program has been designed to get rid of that. Let me explain. I have students in that program right now who are working 2 to 3 typical grade levels above where they would have been placed in a traditional setting. They don't need to qualify for GT. They don't need to have special testing and multiple paperwork and record keeping. It's a natural flow. And it's not just, well, this is a GT student, so we're going to take them out of math and put them 2 years above in math. This is standard by standard. Every single student has an opportunity to be gifted. But here's the other side. It also doesn't label students for not mastering skill levels at the typical grade level. Let me tell you, if I had a student who was cognitively disabled and we know that there's a certain level where they may not be able to participate at a higher level in school, I would want my child in a program like that because this student is in the same social setting with peers of their own age as well as peers older than them, peers younger than them. And they can progress through the standards at their own pace and no one's labeling them. They can fit more naturally in the environment without sticking out or without being pulled out of a traditional classroom. And we can do that for multiple years. That's the vision of where I see this going. We're not trying to be exclusionary. We're trying to do a pilot to make sure it works, to make sure it's the best we can do for our kids. And we can't do a multiple age pilot having kids coming and going out of the program. Do I hope that this is a huge success and we expand this throughout the district? Yes, because I believe in this. I believe in this work. I believe that this is going to transform the way students learn, but I also believe it transforms the way teachers teach together. I think there is so much more to this program than what we are doing right now. And we need to continue this work and be positive about what we see happening. And I hope that we can embrace what this work is and knowing that this is something we hope we can offer every single child that comes through the door. But we have to have the facts and the evidence to prove that it works. So when you say that we're labeling kids or that's the exact opposite of what we're trying to do here. I think others make it sound
like a group like this, and you have this group. You have two groups. You have the groups that are in the program and the groups that's not in the program.
Correct.
So you have two different groups.
Correct. We do have two different groups, but you have to remember this is a pilot. The board approved for us to do a pilot. I can't do a pilot without having another group. I mean, I don't know how else you're going to do a pilot. Then you're saying you should never pilot anything different because then you're excluding kids. I can't agree with that. We always have to be pushing the envelope on how we're teaching and how students are learning and how students are growing and how can we make that more natural without having labels on kids. I think that is critical for the future of public education.
When I walk down the hallways, I read the walls, I see what's on the walls, and I think of my youngest son, Josh, who's in school, and he would get problems wrong in math because he would spell remainder wrong. He would get it marked wrong. The answer was right, but because he spelled remainder wrong, the problem was wrong, and he'd get a lower grade on his paper. Or in science, he would spell a word wrong, he'd get the problem wrong. And in his writing, he'd get downgraded because he'd spell a word wrong. And then you look in the walls and you read the walls. I understand the concepts. But no, Josh hasn't been out of here, you know, he started here 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. You know, how many different things has transpired through Gibraltar in the last two decades?
That's education in general. It's constantly changing like that.
But how has it improved education? Can you say that this is going to improve education overall?
I believe very strongly in the pilot and the work and the vision of what we're doing. I do, or we wouldn't be doing this. I believe in it. And I also believe that it's our job to push the envelope, to keep looking for better ways to do something. Because what's the alternative? What's the alternative to never look beyond what we already have and what we're already doing? I'm not going to settle for that ever. And I hope that everyone joins us in this and helps support it and sees the good work that's happening. Because this isn't just about one group of teachers or one group of kids. This is about a way of making teaching and learning work for everyone. Who doesn't want to do that? And if you want to say no to something like that, I wonder why you're in business. Because we should always be looking to do better.
I have a question.
Yes.
How long is the pilot?
Well, we started last year.
Last year we did.
Kindergarten.
First.
Then we got parent feedback on that, right?
Well, it's been
two now.
So
this is my third year teaching a multi-age.
Okay.
So my first 2 years I taught K-1.
Right.
And then this year is a K-3.
First 2 years you taught
K-1,
and this is K-3.
So your first students are now in the third.
No.
Well, my first year here, I've been teaching for 4 years. So my first year here, I taught kindergarten. So my second and third year, I taught K-1. And then this year, I taught K-3. So yes, some of my students that I had in kindergarten are in this third grade.
I would suggest we have an evaluation, assessment, whatever you want to call it, at the end of the school year and present some of this information. I happen to believe in the concept, and it is a pilot, which is just a trial, so to speak, and it's been successful for K-1, and let's just see, let's wait and see. I understand what you're saying, but we don't have enough information yet, and the new way, hate to say it, is multi-age, and that's going to cover all the kids. Then Josh would have gotten help if he were in a group like that, if they had had it. He would have gotten.
No, but what I'm saying is the standards change.
Who can talk to Walker?
No, I mean within the school.
Not really. It's everywhere.
Have you read the walls?
What?
Have you read the papers on the walls?
Now, are you going to get into a curriculum issue? Because there is a curriculum issue, and that
yes.
would be Lucy Calkins, and I'm not a fan of necessarily everything the way that's going with that, but there is a plan to improve that, there is a plan to grow and to move forward, and I'll go and read the walls, I'll do it, I'll come, I'm planning on helping young kids write these letters, so I'll be here. It's got to be one step at a time. As a board member, you think I'm not frustrated? One step at a time, one day at a time.
I think to bring the conversation back around to the multi-age, I think the thing that, as a parent who's had kids go the traditional path and one now starting in the multi-age, we have excellent teachers, traditional and multi-age,
mm-hmm.
that the multi-age structure, it's the structure in question, not the abilities of our teachers. And
correct.
We cannot, I cannot stress that enough because I have such wonderful things to say about all of the teachers that my kids have been through, my older ones. And my experience as of now has been fantastic with the multi-age. So I have more wonderful stories and memories to be made. But I think that people, as I hear in the community, sometimes people will say, well, it's the teacher versus teacher, and it's a structure versus a structure, and the multi-age is bound by their structure as the traditional is bound by their structure. And so I want that to be put out there, that we have excellent educators on both fronts. Your child will not be cheated one way or the other. And that it's really important for me to
label.
As we have a conversation, it's nobody is saying that multi-age or traditional classroom is better than the other. We're saying it's another option for students. It's another option for parents. That's all it is.
And perhaps it's not right for everyone.
It's not right for everyone, and we understand that, but we're saying this is another option for these kids that might need it, or for these parents to not worry so much. It's an option. Nobody is saying that it's better.
I'm not saying it's better or worse. That's not what I'm saying. My concern is that once you're in the program, you're in it, and other students can't get in it because it's a pilot program, as I was referred to several times. And there's a lot of other issues I should not have brought up.
You're still going to have people who are going to possibly say, okay, I tried it and I want out. It's going to happen. It's going to go back and forth. There's something to do about that. And I think some of the things that you're talking about, education is constantly changing. After teaching for 27 years, I have seen so many different things happen and come back around. They're here for a couple of years, they go away. It's constantly changing. Tina's obviously very, very passionate about the multi-age, and I think that that's wonderful. But we also, in our classrooms, have the child who is working at 2 to 3 age levels or grade levels above their peers, as well as on the opposite end. So we have that as well. The one thing I want to say, I really like your idea that you did up here with the standard-based thing. I like it more so, and I like it that you didn't have to feel like you created it all, you kind of just took it and then put it in its place. I guess I would like to use it more as a teacher for recording purposes and not give it to the parent, because the one thing that we are working a lot towards is being very careful stating exactly what levels, for example, our child is reading at, where if a parent who has a third grader goes and looks at this, they don't need to anybody to tell them that whatever, I can't say that far, but level one is going to be, they know that that's not the third grade level. So you're going to kind of get a little bit into that. We've been talking a lot about that in our elementary staff meetings and things, getting away from my child's way down here and yours is way up here, and then you're going to get that comparing.
The biggest thing that we're getting into as a multi-age, like as our, is that saying that they don't need to master it until they leave us. So it's okay. We're trying to get that across to the parents from day one.
Yeah, and that's going to be a hard transition for them too, to say that.
Right. So that's how we're transitioning. It's okay if your child right now isn't exactly where they need to be, because we're going to get them.
Yeah, we try to say that too. It's okay if your child is not yet reading at the end of second grade.
So, but that's
how we will get them there.
Yeah, that's how we're transitioning our parents.
What about our grading ad hocs? Are we going to get this involved with that grading committee or ad hoc?
Like I said before, this is a pilot.
Okay,
and so, really, Sue, I like what your comment was. You just said, we have these kids in our classroom who are 2 grade levels above and kids that are struggling, but yet you are confined by what you're required to teach at the grade level you're required to teach it in. You have a confined space. What's nice about the structure, and I like the way you described this, it frees that up. Not only do you not have to worry about confining it, but you're not the only one that would have to work with that student. You have a team of teachers now who can work at multiple levels, which eases that piece for you, that burden or that difficulty for you. So yes, I absolutely know you do it every day. I know that. I'm trying to bring forth a structure and a system that makes it easier for you, that gives you teams of people, that gives our parents confidence their children are learning and growing, and they don't feel that their kids are way behind. But again, it's a pilot. So
when something's a pilot, you're always going to say, this didn't work right, so we need to try to restructure it and do it differently. This worked really well, we want to replicate that. That's what a pilot's all about. So we don't have all the answers, but I think we have done a lot. There's been a lot of good work that's been done, and I'm very excited to see where it continues, and I agree, we can do all kinds of assessments at the end of the year, and I think bringing in our parents again and surveying them and getting their opinions on how they're feeling about the program is also a very important piece of this. So especially those parents, all parents, but especially the ones that have been in the program multiple years with their kids now. So thank you guys again
Thank you.
This is the first reading of the
policy? It's just the first reading, yeah. So we'll bring it back.
And I guess I asked if we have any input on the specific wording of it for the next reading.
Yes, so bring it my way, please. Feel free to email me any ideas you might have.
Okay. All right. Approve payment of the bills.
Okay, so move. I second.
Motion by Linnea, second by Lynn. Approve the payment of the bills. Any discussion? I'd entertain a vote, I guess, starting with Lynn.
All in favor.
Yeah, we don't need to do a roll call.
It's okay. All right. Not until later.
Yeah. All right. Good all night. In favor?
Aye.
Aye. Nay?
Aye.
Approved. All right.
You were approved. Aye. Right?
Approved posting for assistant maintenance supervisor.
I do want to say, so due to the recent hire of Joe Horn as our district maintenance supervisor, we're now in the position of needing to hire an assistant maintenance supervisor. As I have spoken with the board about this particular position, we have talked about in the past that this required an advanced degree. But through our discussions, we have talked about the idea of it not just being about an advanced degree, but also relevant experience. And therefore, I would recommend that the board make the motion with the posting including advanced degree or relevant experience. That way we can cast a wide net and get a variety of candidates, and we're not excluding people just based on whether or not they have the advanced degree, but we're also not excluding people with an advanced degree from applying.
What was the second half? I move to approve the posting for assistant maintenance supervisor with the inclusion of advanced degree or relevant experience in the posting.
I'll second.
Motion by Wendy, second by Lynette. Approve the posting for the maintenance supervisor as noted.
Assistant maintenance supervisor.
Assistant maintenance supervisor. Thank you, Wendy. Mm-hmm. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Okay, item number 12. Cancel regularly scheduled November 28th and December 26th board meeting.
Well, I do have a new recommendation. Based on what's happened with long-term care today, I would make the recommendation that we go ahead and hold the November 28th meeting, but that it's just going to be on the long-term care discussion. That way our employees and their families can enjoy the Thanksgiving holiday without worrying about putting together all the work for a board meeting. It'll be very easy to post that one item. It's not going to require a lot of work. We can get it done before Wednesday, which is the day that we start the break. But I also would ask and recommend that we post or cancel the December 26th board meeting as it does fall within the holiday break.
Anybody care to make that motion?
I will move to cancel the December 28th board meeting.
26th.
Thank you. Board meeting and leave the November 28th board meeting.
Okay.
I'll second.
Motion by Linnea, second by Wendy. Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Okay. Accept donations.
I lost track of my donation. Oh my goodness. Carla Marr brought forth a donation. Has something to do with eggs. I lost it.
Waseda Farms donated 4 cases of organic eggs. So I'm asking that the board approve the donation of organic eggs for the school.
I move to approve the donation of organic eggs. From Carla Mott. From Waseda Farms.
Second by Wendy to accept the donation of Carla Mars. Waseda Farms egg. I wanted to see if you were paying attention.
Oh, dear.
I think you heard.
I second.
Right? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Motion to adjourn.
I move to adjourn.
Aye. Do you want to do this now, or do you want to do it later?
I'll keep it, scan it, and email it
to all of you. You can trust me.
What is the air?
Well, I've got her chart, too, so.
I had it on earlier, you guys. I don't know what happened to the air.
I am perfectly happy.